The Reset Podcast is a show about fresh starts. In business, career, relationships, health, and life in general, sometimes we all go forward to a new square one. Every moment is a new opportunity to begin again, and my guests will tell you how, when, and why they decided to reset their lives. I'm Franklin Taggart. Welcome to the Reset Podcast. Hello, wherever you are. This is Franklin Taggart, and this is the Reset Podcast. My guest today is a friend of mine that I've known for a few years now and have really admired for a lot of reasons. Her name is Amanda Fuel, and it's hard to know where to start in terms of talking about all of the different things that you do, Amanda, but I first became aware of you through Conscious Business Connections in Fort Collins when you were in the front of that group. And it's since gone by the wayside and you've branched out into a whole bunch of other areas. But I'd like to have you talk a little bit about, you can tell people what Conscious Business Connections was and then talk about how that kind of launched you in the direction that you're going now.
Okay, sure. Yeah, Conscious Business Connections started with myself and three other women who started the group when I was in my late 20s, and I felt very new onto the business scene, and I didn't even really have a business at the time, but I knew I would have a business, and I'd always wanted to have a business, but I was a little bit, I guess, afraid of having a business in the, I'll just say, in the old way of sort of separating business from the rest of my life, or feeling like I was having to be on in business and do things a certain way in business that wasn't natural to me. So when these ladies started talking about Conscious Business Connection, and they were all very spiritually minded, very heart-centered, very sort of, you know, seeing everyone as a having value. And they just saw business in a different way. They saw it as an exchange of value. They saw it as you showing up as not just your best self, but having something to give. You know, all of those kinds of concepts are what appealed to me. So we started the group, and fairly quickly the other three ladies fell away, got busy with other things. But man, I had found my home, my center, my place where these are my people and my tribe. And so I did everything I could or everything I needed to do to keep it going. And it went for 9 years, A weekly meetup for 9 years. We only have ever missed one meetup. We never canceled for snow or holidays, except one time where it fell on Christmas. Because it was just that kind of group. It was like, well, we want to see each other on the holidays. And only now do I really appreciate, you know, like what that was and what that meant. Back when I was doing it, I definitely was like, hey, of course, this is just the thing you do. You know, you just, mm-hmm. of course you have a meet up with your friends every week. So,
grew to be a pretty large group too, right?
It did. It was one of the biggest meetups, like by the numbers that you could look up online, and you'd see we had, you know, 1800 people or something. And then it grew to, a Loveland location. Mm-hmm. One of the members wanted to take it to Loveland, so we did that, and we had an online group going, and yeah, it grew very organically. It changed shape a couple times. And honestly, I wanted to finish it, you know, complete it when it was still in its prime, and really just things were happening in my personal life, which was we were welcoming a daughter into our home, a 10-year-old girl we ended up adopting a year later. But when we, you know, finally had her in our home, I just knew it was time for me to move a little more into the personal side of my life and let the group come to an end. Mm-hmm. And by then also I had focused my attention more on public speaking. So I'd kind of, I had the business now, you know, and I had spent the years that it takes sometimes to niche into what you're really passionate about. And So I had done that for myself, and I really had landed on public speaking because that's what grew my business. Largely because I was public speaking week after week in front of that meetup group. And I had learned so much from doing that.
Yeah.
Speaking and also like leading activities, you know, it's not just all about like one directional from the stage, but like getting the group involved and how to do that, you know, week after week when you're different levels of excited or different levels of successful and you got to still show up, you know, and how do you do that in an authentic way in front of people who are, you know, they're aware, they're watching to see like, how honest are you being? How authentic, how connected are you being? And so, that just, all of that excited me. And I've niched now into public speaking. So that's my new meetup that I just started is called She Speaks.
We're going to talk more in detail about She Speaks here in a minute, but
yeah.
I'd like to kind of go back to when you first started CBC with the other ladies. You didn't say, you said you didn't particularly have your own business yet.
Yeah.
And I'm kind of curious as to how your business emerged from that community. What opportunities did you recognize that turned into a business for you?
Yeah, that's a cool story, I think. Because it was so organic and so slow, I guess. And, you know, as I was going through it now, I look back and I say, well, that happened fast. But I was taking a meditation class from a woman who's a little local celebrity, Rachel Jane Gruber. Mm-hmm. And she has this cool moving meditation class. And I took it for 3 years and ended up teaching it for 4 years, right? But somewhere along the way of taking it from her, it's probably about a year in, she asked me to be her assistant. And so I was her assistant. I did like got the dry cleaning and took the packages to the mail and then like, oh, I started writing her blog and kind of moving up in her business. And so she decided she needed to groom me for further leadership in her business. And she took me to her marketing mentor, a big, like 1,000 people in the room conference. Mm-hmm. His name is Brendan Burchard. He's mm-hmm. famous in his own industry. And so Brendan Burchard's up there talking on the stage for 4 days. And I mean, he was talking right to me, just everything he was saying. I was the only person in the room. It was me and Brendan. And I just was like, wow, I think I can do this method. You know, this method of marketing and serving people in an authentic way. I think I can do this. And so we're sitting there, Rachel Jane's a couple people down the row from me. And Brendan says, okay, now everybody, you're listening to all these great ideas, but I need you to go home and actually create a class, a product, something you can offer in 60 days. You got to do it. You got to implement it, you know? And so I'm like, okay, Brendan. And then Rachel Jane leans down to me and she goes, Amanda, for you, that's 30 days. You got to do it in 30 days. And I said to her, okay, Rachel, but you're going to have to fire me if I do that. Because of course I'm working full time for her, you know? Yeah. So we're just joking that, right? In the conference. But sure enough, that's what happened. I went home. I did not put my notes, like I was about to like slide them into my desk, you know? And I was like, no, do not put these notes away. Put them on your desk. And tomorrow morning, wake up and do something about it. So that's kind of what I did. I was like, okay, I'm just going to do everything that he told me that I thought was right for me, you know? And I started doing it, and sure enough, I had something to offer. And sure enough, like a month or two later, like I gave some speaking gigs and I filled some classes, and a month or two later, I had to go to Rachel Jane and say, I don't know what to tell you, but this stuff works. And
I'm fired.
Yeah, and I need to be fired. And I have, I have clients, and I kind of need to, you know, at first I was like, well, let me work a little less. And she was like, I kind of need you to work a little more. So maybe this is a good time to part ways. And, you know, we had always known I would do this, but I think we were thinking it would happen like 5 years down the road, and it happened after two. So it was a great leaving of the nest, you know, a little shove out the nest, as I like to call it, a very loving shove.
Now, was this before Rachel Jane really took off and exploded worldwide?
Yes, for sure. I was her first employee, and it was me and her husband and her working in their home. You know, I would come over to their home and be at my little desk. And after that, I don't think it was long before she had her office and, you know, she really took off. So I like to say, you know, I got out just in time, because I really would have been caught up in the swell things. I mean, I love what she does, you know, and that was, and I had benefited directly from it. And that was another indication for me to go into business for myself, because I pretty much had like what I would consider the best job ever, working for something I totally believed in, all using my skills, appreciated, seen, acknowledged, you know, and I still wanted to do my business.
Yeah.
So
what was that? What was that first class?
That was Art of Feminine Presence. Oh, the first class I offered?
That you did, yeah.
I did offer Art of Feminine Presence for one, because I had just become a teacher of that. And I, you know, at first I did not get any clients for it, but after employing these marketing techniques, I did. I filled two classes. And then the other thing I offered was a marketing mastermind. And I was very transparent with my CBC people, right? My conscious business people. I was like, look, you guys, I just paid a couple $1,000 to go learn this. I'm about to implement it. So how about I teach it to you and we all implement it together? And so I got some people in some masterminds, being very transparent that I haven't implemented this yet. That's why the pricing is as it is. You know, it was very low cost. But we did it. And it was also great accountability for me to like keep walking my talk. But I have encouraged other clients to do that when they don't feel like, wow, I haven't implemented this. I'm like, maybe you should tell some people that. And get them on the journey to implement it with you. I think it's a great learning together way to do that.
Now that particular business, it changed, morphed, and grew over time into quite an operation where you were doing quite a bit of individual coaching and classes all over the map. It felt like, in terms of content, you really had a lot going on. And I'm curious now, as you look back on that, what were the important creative parts of that process for you in terms of figuring out what to present, what to offer, how to present it, you know, to people in a way that would appeal to them? What were the big learning moments in that?
Well, I think the important thing for me was to feel like I could apply a set of marketing skills to anything that I wanted to teach.
Yeah.
And I mean, as I've grown in business and understood more why I fit as an entrepreneur better than I fit in a corporate setting, for example, is because I can do whatever I want in a very spoiled way if I can communicate about it well. And I did find my community fairly flexible, or maybe you'd even say forgiving, of me jumping around a little bit because I was very honest with where I was at in the process, maybe, you know, like I was very much like, we're trying this. This is an experiment. This is something I'm really excited about. I have passion. I have follow through. I'm not just like gonna, you know, have a spark and then you're never gonna see me again. Like, you're going to see me and you're going to see me change into the next thing too. So I got to do like marketing masterminds for a while, a lot of marketing coaching. And then, and my feminine presence stuff I kept up as well for a long time. And just anything that was like in that realm, I felt totally happy to do. And to present and to offer. And I think like something that I learned along the way is that I'm not going to be as concerned with my image as I am going to be concerned with my level of excitement.
Tell me more about that. That's an intriguing direction and insight, I think. Tell me more.
Yeah, I guess I felt like if I try to, you know, I think there's a real desire when you're starting in a business to make sure you have this brand that is completely coherent from the outside and everything is on brand and everything points in the same direction. Mm-hmm. And I mean, I think that's really great when it happens naturally, but I think it's really stifling when it's not where someone's at.
Yeah.
And I just saw so many people in their first couple years of business, you know, that first year to 5 years of business, who weren't sure of their niche, but were sure that they had to commit to a niche.
Yeah.
And it basically felt like a jail sentence to them, you know, like I know I should do this. The market wants this, but I have all this other stuff I'm passionate about too.
Yeah.
And I just think there's like absolutely this incubation time where you got to just try a bunch of things before you know what lines up with your excitement level and a brand.
Yeah. I always really feel like the brand for a business is an evolving thing. And it's like a lot of times when people start in a direction, they feel like that they have to have their logo and they have to have their, you know, they have to have their colors picked out and they have to, you know, the brand identity is most important of all because that's what everybody's going to see.
Yeah.
And honestly, they don't have enough awareness of their own value proposition to have a brand yet. Mm-hmm. And it's like the brand needs to come out of this relationship with your customer and it needs to come out of this experience of delivery and this experience of value exchange. And it's like, it's a little bit more complex than just having a logo, you know?
Yeah.
And a really nice website.
Right. So. And if you do like land on a logo, you know, you can count on it changing. So I hope you got the $5 logo instead of the $5,000 logo at first, you know, at first.
I should probably be an affiliate for Fiverr.com. Or it's like my affiliate commissions on that would be like 10 cents a sale or something.
Yeah, it would be. I used to have a page in my marketing workshop, my mastermind, that was like listed out all those. I called them brand accessories. Mm-hmm. And I like put pictures of like a purse and a necklace and earrings and stuff, because to me it is more the accessory. It's not the meat. Mm-hmm. It's really nice to have if it comes naturally. But what I told people is that usually there's one that's most important to you, mm-hmm. that you just feel naked without it. Okay. So if you just need to get that business card done, go do that. If mm-hmm. you just have to have your URL just like be perfect, then go do that. You're like, what is the one that you really do actually need to just feel like a real business person?
Yeah.
You know, but please don't spend time doing all 10.
Yeah.
Because you're just going to be spinning your wheels for a while. And
you might want to wait on the hot air balloon.
Yeah, you know, don't need to know your, you know, bumper sticker, your sky wrap, your sky ready. Yeah, the car wrap. Yeah. Yeah. So pick out the one that makes you feel like an adult in business and then get on with the meat.
Let's move a little bit further into the future from where we've been talking about and talk a little bit about the introduction of your daughter into your life. Mm-hmm. And all of the ways that that changed things. I know that that's probably going to be hard to count the ways, but mm-hmm. If you could tell a little bit of that story, I think that that would be a nice way for us to segue into what you're doing now.
Well, I'm so glad you're asking me that question right now this year, because if you asked me that question last year at this time, mm-hmm. I would be bumbling for an answer. I was totally in over my head at this time last year, you know. My daughter came to us in August of 18. And so we had met her in May. She came to live with us in August, and she had been in foster care for about 5 of her 10 years at that point. And she was a perfect match from us from the beginning. Mm-hmm. Day one, I fell absolutely in love with this girl and knew she was for us, you know. And even with that perfect match, she was totally unexpected in how this like relationship would be formed and how she would make her way into our home, which now I feel so connected to her, and I get it a lot more, not completely, but a lot more. Yeah. But yeah, at first it was really, really difficult. And, you know, the things that she would get upset about were so foreign to me. I had no idea why different things were upsetting her. Mm-hmm. So for example, like getting to school in the morning was so difficult and hard, and she would wake up and it's like she would forget our whole relationship, all the fun things we'd done, all the love and cuddling we'd just done the night before. And she just felt so angry with this getting to school process. And I remember one time, this is just like an example of the mind-blowing stuff I've learned that was mind-blowing to me, mm-hmm. at least. You know, one time we were going to school and it was not working. I'm sure we were at least 30 minutes late for school, and she's crying and I'm pretty much crying. And I'm just asking her, you know, so what are you trying to tell me with all of this, Evie? You know, what's going on for you? And, you know, I've asked her that in different moments, but this moment just like lined up and she actually heard my question. Mm-hmm. And she just looked at me and she's like, "You're trying to get me out of your house."
Oh, wow.
You know, and I was like, "Oh my God, that explains a lot." She didn't see it as me getting her off to school and fed and clothed and excited to get to new friends. She really felt that she was waking up and being tossed out of the house in a way.
Yeah.
Oh my God. Wake up calls like that, like how that I could be seeing a situation so, so drastically differently than another person, to the detriment of her and our relationship. Like, not the detriment, the devastation, you know, of the relationship. Were just huge, huge wake-up calls for me. I think in part because I am a communicator. I pride myself on like getting this connection going, and I'm saying things and you're hearing them and you're saying things and I'm like really grokking and, yeah. You know, just, oh, connecting. And so to not have that connection and for there to be so many barriers to getting to that point was a big lesson I learned many, many times. So when she did have that like revelation and I put it together, oh, she has been actually kicked out of actual homes.
Yeah.
In that way, several times, you know, then we were able to start at a different place.
Yeah.
In the mornings and start to get it together from there. So yeah, that was a big lesson.
Huge realization.
Whew.
And what a heartbreaker too, right?
Oh God.
It just tears you up.
I think I cried that whole day, you know?
Yeah.
Which was another sort of revelation to me that I guess, you know, when you're quote going through a hard time, I'd been through hard times where more work, more effort is what paid off. And I feel like this hard time, this welcoming of Evie into our home, like this took emotional effort.
Yeah.
You know, like I felt like my job some days was to lay on the couch in just stillness or surrender, which are two really words that sound a lot more peaceful than the process actually.
Yeah,
I guess exhaustion might be something, but it was like, I just have to let these waves of emotion roll over me for hours.
Like, it's not like you could do anything else, right?
Right.
It's like you'd reached the physical and mental and emotional end.
Yep. Yeah. Yeah. My job was not to read another book or sometimes not even to like share with somebody else what had happened.
Yeah.
And hear their advice or anything like that. Like this was my job to just sit in the emotion and let myself have it and hold some of it for her too.
One of the things that that comes to mind here is that you really allowed yourself to fully have the role of mother. And you very legitimately and thoughtfully set aside pretty much everything else that you'd been doing up to that point so that you could be available to this girl. And I'm curious, were there any difficulties in making that kind of a decision?
Yes, there were. And it wasn't like a decision we made one time. It was a decision that like we had to keep sort of weighing the pros and cons and saying, this is what's really right.
Mm-hmm.
Pouring more of our energy, our time, and letting go of money, really, because I wasn't working. I would choose to work less. So we would say, okay, this is the right place to put more of my energy. Because I did not think I would stop working. I didn't think I would. I knew I would let go of CBC, right? My weekly commitment. But I didn't think I would stop working.
Right.
And so what ended up happening was I definitely did. I did stop, full stop. And luckily Justin's business, my husband, you know, naturally sort of came into its own at that point.
Mm-hmm.
And that was really helpful, but still I love to work. But you know, that's part of motherhood, I think, is not like, what do you most want to do? It's what does the situation calling you to do? Which actually I think is a better question for my life in general to not always. No matter what. It's, and I, you know, so I'm not like trying to say this was like a selfless thing. I think what I'm trying to say is it's even more self full of me, self loving of me to ask what the situation calls for than it is for me to ask, what do I want?
Yeah.
So I just get these surface level answers when I ask that, you know.
What do I want is a hard question to answer most times.
Yeah.
It's like I'm more inclined to look at what can I do?
What can I do?
What can I do? I mean, is there something here I can do? You know, it's like, what do I want? That's a little too esoteric.
it really is for me, it can get me into like some back alleys of like, just things that don't really serve me and don't really serve my values or the people around me. So I can equally go into the place of forgetting myself in the question as well. And that's not where I wanted to go either. But yeah, what is this situation calling for has been really helpful.
Very good.
With Evie. And so we slowly, gradually made the decision for me to do less work out there in the world and more work or effort or energy toward Evie's assimilation.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it seems in the last few months that she's made some leaps in her own life that have been really incredible.
Oh my God. So much. She's had a completely different school year this year than the first year. Mm-hmm. The reports from her fourth grade year to her fifth grade year, some of the staff are new and they're like, who is this person that they're talking about in fourth grade? We don't see that in fifth grade at all. We don't even see how she could get there. So that's been amazing. Mm-hmm. And because of that, they've started to recognize her intelligence and she's gotten some of her reactions and behaviors under control. So her intelligence shines through, and she just was identified as gifted and talented.
Wow.
Yes, and she got off of her IEP.
Nice.
And onto a 504. So that's moving from like having an emotional disability is what they called it for her first 5 years of school, you know, and now she's moving to where like, oh, I just need some accommodations and I'm good.
It's great.
Oh,
wow, it's, that's really encouraging.
So cool. And I mean, that was never like a goal of mine, you know. Mm-hmm. They all take care of that at school. I don't care if she's on an IEP. That doesn't really mean anything to me. But now seeing how it has shown up, it feels so good.
Definitely.
It feels so good.
I'd like to hear a little bit. She's been in your lives now for going on 2 years. Is mm-hmm. that right?
Yeah. May it'll be 2 years. Yeah.
Wow. That's right. Okay. So somewhere in there, a spark got lit in you to start this organization called She Speaks.
Yeah.
I'd like you to talk a little bit about how that came about.
Yeah. Well, gosh, probably, you know, one thing that really helped me in the first year of Evie being with us is I would share on Facebook very publicly some of the things I was going through. Mm-hmm. And that was out of sheer need to be somewhat seen in my struggle mm-hmm. and not have it be a secret.
Yeah.
Because, oh my gosh, the tendency for me to want to like lock it down, put it in a box and just show the bright and shiny, that struggle is real for me, Franklin. Yeah. I would love to just be bright and shiny all the time. And yet I could see that was going to eat me alive. So I started sharing.
Yeah.
And the response I got was just overwhelming. Thank you for sharing. I'm going through this too. I mean, I don't know anybody else directly that has a foster kid.
Yeah.
You know, but every other parent, it seemed like, was going through it. They were questioning themselves. They were, you know, feeling out of their depth. They were wondering how their kids could think they meant that when they said this. And, you know,
yeah.
Oh my gosh, the whole kid parent emotional dynamic and the changes that happen in becoming a parent. I mean, it's just, it's so complex.
Yes, it is.
Yeah. So because of that and how seeing how much connection was built by sharing my story, I, you know, really wanted to help other people share their stories. Mm-hmm. And the other place that She Speaks came from was a group called She Leads.
Right.
Which is my friend Krista Berry's group. And that was a place that I could go and I felt supported, which was incredibly important. I felt Like I could leave my house and not just be mom.
Yeah.
You know, but I could go there and be Amanda and have all the parts of me show up.
Yeah.
Leader, speaker, business owner, mom, wife, friend, all that stuff. And it was so supportive to me. And so I said, Krista, can I steal some of your branding and have this sister group that helps women tell their stories and use their voices? And also is this great place for even, you know, introverts to show up, mm-hmm. have a place to speak, be encouraged to speak from authenticity and presence instead of trying to be the show and trying to have everything polished and perfect all the time. You know, we're over that.
Cue the lights.
Yeah. We want to get to the real stuff. So that's where it came from. And there was something else I was going to say about that. But
could you talk a little bit about, I'm starting to see more and more importance in men and women finding support from their gender.
Mm.
And when you were talking about Krista's group, she leads, and the type of support that you felt there. Can you talk a little bit about how that particular group, the support that you find there, how does that shape the rest of what you're doing these days?
Oh gosh. I'm interested in your thoughts about support from your own gender, because mm-hmm. I'm not sure what the heck it is about a women only group mm-hmm. or for my husband, his men's only groups. You know, there is something about it, but I don't know what it is. I have not articulated that yet or even become aware of it yet for myself. So what I'll say about that though, is that this group encourages self-reflection, mm-hmm. but together. So I'll say witnessed self-reflection.
Yeah.
And I think that is absolutely priceless. Because I can go off and read a book to myself and have all these amazing thoughts. And for some reason, you know, even if I write some of them down, they kind of evaporate into the ethers.
Yeah.
But man, when I, you know, listen to a speaker and write my notes, and then I just turn to one other person and I say, this is what I just heard, and this is how I'm applying it to my life. It just like sinks in at a different level.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, I can feel or / imagine or / know that my cells change.
Yeah.
You know, like something is different when I walk out of that room.
Well, you had mentioned earlier in the conversation how important it is to you to be seen and heard.
Yeah.
And honestly, I my take on the men's side of that is that's important to men too.
Mm-hmm.
And it's all too often something that we don't actively seek out from other men. And mm-hmm. it's like 9 times out of 10, it's like we happen onto it by accident.
Mm.
It's like we go to some kind of a gathering or a, you know, some kind of a retreat or some kind of a thing. And then all of a sudden there's a men's discussion that happens. And then all of a sudden we realize, hey, wait a minute. I think I just found something that was missing from my life, you know? But it's not something that I don't know that we're so particularly socialized to seek out.
Right. Right.
And I don't even think that we're actually kind of, consciously socialized to be seen and heard other than in whatever, you know, professional role you might play or whatever, but yep. just as a person, I don't know that we're actively encouraged to seek out that kind of attention.
Mm-hmm.
And so being in a group of men allows that to happen in an extraordinarily powerful but yet organic way. And it doesn't have to be a pissing contest where we're trying to impress each other. we can just be real and vulnerable with each other. And that's hard to do when we're in the company of women.
Do you know why that is?
Yeah, I think part of it is that we're socialized to show off when women are around. We're socialized to, you know, to act differently in their presence, to, you know, shake our tail feathers and go through the mating dance. And that just kind of happens naturally and normally for most guys, is that they go into that mode. And I think it's mostly unconscious. And I wonder too, when women are around men, if something similar happens in terms of you show up differently so that the men will feel a certain way.
Yeah, I can definitely see in myself or and in other people, because it's so easy to see it sometimes in other people, but this need around mixed company to just, you know, make sure I present myself as I'm in a committed relationship. You know, I'm extroverted, I'm social, I'm a little winky, you know, and that is not sexual, you know, so I have to have this like extra little guard, I guess, or something. And I can also see a bit of like just letting the guys know I can hold my own, you know, and I'm not looking for like special consideration because I'm a woman or anything like, you know, I want to be respected as one of the people. You know, not one of the guys, not one of the girls, one of the people in the room. And I want my equal time, space, energy, everything like that. And so that's another thing to like convey. That maybe I don't have to convey in a group of women. That's, I'm just having these thoughts for the first time right now.
I'm curious about that. Like in the She Leads group, do you find that that naturally isn't there? You know,
I do. You know, there are different dynamics that happen in a group of women. And maybe one thing that She Leads and hopefully She Speaks does too, She Speaks is newer than She Leads, but She Leads definitely has this down in their culture as, you know, one of the things that happens in a group of women is we don't want to take up too much of the time. And we want to defer mostly to make sure like, you know, everybody else has what they need. And so, and She Speaks, the culture is take up your space. It's explicitly and implicitly in the room. So I, maybe it's just easier to balance out the natural tendencies of one gender versus like having to balance all that's going on when two genders are in the room to get to a safe space. I don't know.
It's a lot of work.
And, you know, someday we'll all be fully present in every room and it'll be awesome.
Well, that then leads me to the next question about She Speaks. And that is, talk to me about the presence that, that begins to come through as they start to become comfortable with their own communication styles and skills and their own message. Talk to me about how that presents differently than perhaps a group of men might.
Well, I'll share a couple of things I noticed. I mean, I happen to just come from this meeting right now, so I'm just like a buzz with
fresh.
Really cool stuff that happened today. And I've seen similar changes in men, so I'm not sure it's different. Actually, the first client I ever had for presence work, like a coaching client one-on-one, was a 64-year-old man who was getting back in the dating scene, and he wanted me to help him get his swagger back. And so I'm like, how am I going to like present the concept of presence to this older guy? I was, you know, young 30s at the time, and so I'm like, I don't, this is hard. And as soon as I said the word presence, he said, You know what? They taught us that in the military. Command presence. Mm-hmm. How to sync up with your body and communicate non-verbally that, you know, you're going this way or you're leading this or, you know, and it was just this really cool connection that, wow, this really is in the, you know, in certain nooks and crannies of the culture mm-hmm. in different ways. But anyway, so as she speaks, one of the things that happened today was that this wonderful, wonderful woman who identifies as an extrovert and identifies herself as having like a show that she kind of puts on. She's comfortable in front of the room, but she's not getting the results that she wants. Mm. She's not feeling connected up in front of the room. People aren't signing up as much as she wants, those kinds of issues.
Yeah.
And she got up and shared today that she had just given a presentation where she had made an offer. And instead of pretending that like, everything's great and I'm so excited to give you this offer and it's amazing and you're going to have such amazing stuff, she told the group, she said, I'm about to present an offer and I'm nervous about this. This is uncomfortable for me. And she said she had the best response she's had by just saying like, what's going on for you, you know, up in the room, like calling out the elephant in the room and saying, I'm nervous. This is hard.
Yeah.
It just makes you so darn relatable. But without that presence, without being really, I feel like at home in your own skin, saying the words, I'm nervous, for someone who's concerned, you know, with their external image is really difficult. So I'm really proud of her progress.
It's amazing.
It was a triumph. I felt proud, you know, that we could help her do that.
Now you're mostly focused in Northern Colorado. Are you going to be offering any online versions of this particular program?
You know, what I do online is I teach my TED Talk classes online.
Oh, okay.
So that tells people.
Say more about that.
Yeah. That. So I'm not affiliated with TED in any way, but I have had some clients who've gone onto the TED stage and who have auditioned for TED. And so I've gotten a lot of insight. I've gotten to go back behind the scenes at our big TEDx Mile High here mm-hmm. and watch them coach some of the TED speakers and stuff. And so I've done some research and like, you know, tried to get a formula here of what TED is expecting, because how are all of their talks going so viral? I mean, other than their giant marketing machine, but these talks are not just getting shared by TED. So what is the difference here? What is going on? And what I find is that it truly is a combination of like using some different adult learning styles, making sure you're touching head and heart every time, you're telling stories, and you're saying something new.
Yeah.
You know, those are some big basics. And so I feel like people can use those basics in any talk that they give. Don't wait to get on a TED stage to give your TED talk, basically. Yeah. It's my message, you know. Use the greatness of TED in every talk that you give. And so that's the program that I offer online. And then we do an in-person showcase of your talk. So you're actually getting up on a stage. I don't want you writing a great speech and like putting it on a shelf, you know.
Yeah.
I want you getting up on stage and getting some great pictures and video of your stuff. And so we talk about presence there and make sure your body is saying the same thing as your mouth.
Yeah.
And that's what I offer online for people. Especially if you have a big story, it can be so valuable to get it down to 10 to 15 minutes.
Totally.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's amazing.
Yeah.
So how can people find out about these programs and all the things that you're doing and to get in touch with you?
Yeah, thank you for asking. AmandaFuel.com is a great place. Fuel spelled kind of like Jewel, but it's F-E-W-E-L-L.
Yeah.
So AmandaFuel.com, I have all my stuff there.
They'll be able to see that on the screen.
Great.
And they'll also be able to see it in all of the descriptions as a link.
Cool.
So people will be able to get directly to you. Is there anything you'd like to say in closing today? This has been a wonderful conversation. I've really enjoyed where we've gone.
I have enjoyed it too, Franklin. I love your insight and your presence. Oh my gosh, you are one of the people I think about when I think about presence. So yeah, thank you for having me.
Feels good to hear. Thank you. Yeah. I would encourage people to get in touch with Amanda to find out about all of these different things that we've talked about today. And just to get to know Amanda, because she's great.
Thank you, Amanda.
We'll go ahead and end our discussion there. And thank you to the listeners for tuning in to this show. The Reset Podcast happens whenever it happens. And it's brought to you by whatever program I happen to be offering at the time, which right now isn't one. So today you've got a sponsor-free show, and it's just me and Amanda. So take advantage of all these really cool things that Amanda's doing. And I'll be back, you know, in the sales pitch mode another time.
That's awesome.
Thanks for taking the time to listen to, subscribe, and review The Reset Podcast. The Reset Podcast features interviews, insights, and in-depth reflections that will help you navigate your own fresh start. If you'd like to be a guest or share an idea for a topic you'd like to hear about, please contact podcast@franklintaggart.com. I offer a wide range of services to people who are ready to live with clear direction, new possibilities, greater freedom, and unlimited creativity. If you're looking for a new beginning, I'm available to help you. More information is available at franklintaggart.com. The Reset Podcast is a production of Franklin Taggart and Make Your Own Way Media. All rights reserved.